This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I can be now carbon dated with all the barbecue and I did over the weekend. Matt, Brett here today. It is a Tuesday. We have to remember this, kids. It is a Tuesday. That means Patrick Cooligan from The Reformer joins us, as well as also Democrat of the Day coming up here in the 5 o'clock hour. Brett, how was your magnificent Memorial Day weekend?
Oh, yeah, enjoyed it. Yeah, had a nice long weekend seeing some friends and got out biking a little bit. No grilling for me, though, but
no.
Still had a good time.
All right. Do you grill much or not really?
I can't at my place, not against the HOA rules. I would get in a lot of trouble.
That's you need to move. I'm no legal expert here, but you need to move, man. Okay. So by the way, Democrat of the day is Senate District 32. Kate Luthner is going to join us. We talked to her last election cycle. She is running again, and I think she's going to do quite well. We'll talk to Kate coming up here about 5:35. So ran around a lot this weekend. When my daughter had her birthday this weekend. So I had to get that done. We did a barbecue. We hadn't done one in a while because of the COVID and all that stuff. And we'd had some get-togethers where we sat in different sides of the back patio. But we kind of had our first get-together. All my best to our friend Katie, who had to have emergency gallbladder surgery. So I'm thinking to myself, that was on Friday. I'm thinking to myself, oh, she's not going to be showing up. She showed up for the barbecue. Tells you how good my barbecues are, man. Right there.
There you go. Yeah. Raving through the gallbladder surgery. Oh, man. I'll tell you what. Matt's barbecue.
I'm sorry. Are you sure? I wouldn't do it for my food. I mean, I'm good, but I'm not that good. It was nice to be out there. I hope you had a nice Memorial Day, but I have to admit, I kind of got stuck between two warring factions on the Memorial Day mentality. On one side is the people that will say something like, Happy Memorial Day. And okay, now, if I may, Memorial Day is not about, it's not like Christmas. It's not like 4th of July or, as Jeff Stein will, Independence Day, okay?
Oh, that argument's coming up in a few weeks, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, God. I get to deal with Stein again. But, what you'll get is it is a Memorial Day. It's a day to remember. And yeah, I can say Happy Memorial Day, but that might not be the memory. And so is it really appropriate to say Happy Memorial Day? I don't know. But I can tell you what, Johnny Doom and Gloom, I don't need the, how dare you? This is a somber, remorseful day. Fine. That's, I get it. There are some people, it's a very serious holiday. I get that. I'm a veteran. Yeah, I appreciate the sacrifice and of all the vets who have been out there all the way through this country's history. 100%. But this idea that I guess we're all supposed to just, sit there and quietly sit in a dark room for the entire weekend, because that's the only way you can. I don't know if that's necessarily the right thing either. I can tell you this. It's to remember is to each their own. Okay. And so I understand that there are some people who are a little bit, but I strap in Memorial Day on a mattress sale or a furniture sale. I don't know if that's necessarily good there, but at the same time, it is what it is. I actually do have a problem with one thing I saw over, speaking of on Memorial Day. Pillsbury, the Pillsbury Doughboy? And they got the cookies that they do, the press cookies.
Oh, yeah.
And they had American flag on it. And the American flag, and they had Pillsbury Doughboy saluting the American flag on the cookie. And I was just like, honoring the troops. I said, okay, now wait a second here. Are you really honoring the troops? Or are you using the troops as a marketing ploy for you to sell, like, oh, we've got these cookies for the holidays here And so, see, we're being patriotic. I mean, you're kind of crossing that line. You know what I mean? It goes, I don't think you're saluting the troops at that point. It's more using the troops as a marketing ploy.
Yeah, not really when you're using a mascot or something to
salute. Yeah, the Pillsbury Doughboy saluting. Oh, thank you, Pillsbury Doughboy. The brave men and women who've lost their lives in Afghanistan, Iraq, World War II, they all appreciate the cartoon character giving them the salute. Yeah, okay. I'm glad we could sell you some cookies. I'm glad that sacrifice got a few cookies sold for you.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the best plan, guys. Don't get me wrong. Sure, a cent from every pack or something like that goes to a veterans group. Great. You could still make that play, put out regular cookies, and be done with it. You know, you didn't have to make it a marketing ploy. That's what I'm just saying. I get really tired of that. That's the thing I get tired of as a veteran. Is I don't mind. I mean, I think it's nice that you salute this stuff, but there's a lot of places that do this, not necessarily for the troops, but so that they can basically market themselves as, look, we're here with the troops. Look at us. We're patriotic. We're Americans too. You know, one of the things that really irks me is the reuniting. You can just reunite that family behind the scenes. You don't need, you know, it's fine. Some of them want to go do the thing in front of the TV. Fine. That's it. That's it. It's what it is. You know, fine. Go and allow them to, you could have them have the reunite behind the scenes. Don't play out other families' emotions for your viewers. You know what I mean? It's supporting the troops was saying, oh, by the way, we let them say hi to each other. Here they are right now. Great. Done. Thank you. That was very nice of you. But the payoff seems to be to have to get the crying kid who hasn't seen their dad in 2 years, who can't basically stand because his dad's there finally. I get it. Tugs on the heartstrings. But you could do that behind the scenes. Let them have their moment just as a family and then bring them out.
Yeah, with you on that, where they have to make a staging thing out of it. Oh, we've got to put a blindfold on the person. We have a special surprise. Yeah. Do it behind the scenes. Let them see their family.
952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I've got breaking. Well, it's some political news. It's interesting. We're back, and the political news for the right just seems to keep getting worse. I had a lot of people this weekend on the politics side ask me the question, Matt, Cook's political report has Minnesota won as a slam dunk guarantee. Republicans are going to win this. I said, wait, whoa, whoa, what? First of all, the Republican Party in Minnesota is a freaking train wreck right now, an absolute train wreck. Ettinger is a fine candidate for the DFL. And I'm not necessarily thinking Finstead's going to win this thing by a mile. I just don't see that, especially as reminder, that is becoming a more Democratic part of the state. So no, the last time this election was with the incumbent Jim Hagedorn was a 3-point win, if I remember. The first time he ran, it was a 1-point win. Slam dunk. What do you think? It's Minnesota 7? Come on. I don't think so because, once again, the Republicans are doing what they can to help us out. Apparently, Michelle McDonald, yes, that Michelle McDonald, is planning on challenging Kim Crockett, yes, that Kim Crockett, for the Minnesota GOP primary for Minnesota Secretary of State, according to sources with knowledge. The filing period closes on Tuesday at 5 p.m., and sources told me McDonald will file to run. He then gives us this update. I've heard through sources that Crockett has been working to the phones to get McDonald not to file. The filing period closes in less than 2 hours. We'll soon know. So we'll know by the end of the show whether she filed or not. I'll keep an update on this. But, okay, let's just put this. One is Michelle McDonald, who is just a train wreck of a candidate on her own. Nothing was better. Was it 2014? When the Republican Party had to basically throw her out of the state fair tent. Mwah! Magnificent. Versus the woman who ran an anti-Semitic video, which was applauded rousingly by the Minnesota GOP at the GOP convention. To which, by the way, Israel, not too happy with you guys. So there's your Secretary of State's race running in for the Republican Party. And just when you thought things were going to be cuddly, snuggly with the Republicans in Minnesota 1, not so much. Jeremy Munson has filed to run in the Minnesota 1 regular election. So now, reminder, Jimmy Hagedorn tragically passed away. They had this. They got a special election because just the timeline worked out. They had enough time to get a special election in, which the actual election to fill out the rest of Jim Hagedorn's current seat will be on primary day. And that primary day then will as well be a primary for the fall election. So you have basically, and once again, Finstad, Brad Finstad won the GOP primary in the special election. Immediately, all the other Republicans got say, we're throwing our full support to him. Our full support. Okay. That didn't last long. 1 week after he narrowly lost the GOP special election, Jeremy Munson has filed for the Minnesota 1 special election. Matt Benda also filed to run. Munson declined to comment. We'll put out a statement later. Frankly, I tell you what, I think that how do you not get out of your own way like this? This is just brilliant. It really is. And yeah. Theo Keefe from Channel 9, 6 days ago, Munson said he'd be exiting politics and supporting Finstad in the August 9th special general election to serve the rest of the current term. Munson is now forcing GOP primary against Finstad on the same day, who decides to hold the seat for the next term. You're going to have to campaign against him. I don't know if you understand that. So you're going to have Jeremy Munson and Matt Benda the entire rest of the special election bashing on the Republican candidate to encourage the people to vote for them, because it's not like it's 3 days later there's the primary for that, the regular election. That happens on the same damn day. Delicious. Oh, pardon me. Delicious. Yeah. It is really remarkable. This is just, the Republican Party's a mess, okay? The Republican Party is a mess. And sure, Jennifer Carnahan didn't win, but you still have the whole thing with Anthony Lazaro still hanging out there. That has to be discussed. You still have some really horrible candidates. You have Republicans who are talking about not only outlawing abortion across the state of Minnesota, but criminalizing it and throwing women in jail. While at the same time, even some of the more extremist Republicans are talking about getting rid of all contraception now. And now you have the debate on guns, and I'll get to that here in a second, because there's a fantastic post a friend of mine posted about it, and just I got to read that. But you know, and the Republicans are sitting there, and they've got to be, oh, well. What I'm seeing Republicans do now is at least say, well, we're for something. Sure, we'll do something. Now, whether or not they actually deliver, it could just be a ploy to just say, hey, we go in with intent, with having no intent of ever changing anything. But the Republicans have enough political traps to kill themselves, you know, in this election. You have Republicans running on raising taxes on the middle and lower class. That's their actual platform. Getting rid of Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and raising the taxes on the middle and lower class with a smile on their face. And then there's that whole try to overthrow the government thing. Yeah, January 6th, you traitorous jackasses. Yep, I remember that. And of course, can we forget the pandemic, where you have Republicans still trying to argue that they overstepped their bounds trying to keep people safe. We should have all taken our healthcare advice from the woman that owned the coffee shop in Albert Lea. She was the only one making common sense when she fled the law and hid in Iowa. Yeah, you guys are, I mean, don't get me wrong. The media is clearly trying to, we got to paint the Democrats as the we're way behind. The Democrats are, oh my God, the Democrats have lost everything already. And they play it so the Republicans look like they're sweeping every office. And that is the narrative you're going to see. And they're blatant about it. It is blatant. And it's not the reporters per se. It's the editorial board. Because why? The people that buy the advertising for the big newspapers and the TV stations are generally Republican companies. And they basically, I don't want to read about how the Democrats are going to win. Talk about how the Democrats are going to lose. And trust me when I say this, I have been in major media. There are those calls that are made that basically are saying, can we not have, I'm not going to pay advertising to hear you guys just do Democratic talking points. You need to go out there and point out how the Republicans are the best party for everyone. And that should be in your headline right there. I've been in places, man. Those are people buy advertising and they want you to basically run a narrative. So no, I don't think the Republicans are a slam dunk guarantee this fall in any capacity. And if the Democrats get out there and fight hard, the Republicans are going to be put on the ropes. So you need to donate. You need to volunteer, help out the campaigns. But the most important thing you need to do is get 5 people registered to vote. Make sure they're registered to vote. Make sure they go to vote when it comes to the election in November. Get them all. Everyone who's listening to me in this state does that. The Republican will get their ass kicked so bad that it will take years, decades for them to come back from it. I mean, that's just simple. That's the easiest thing to explain. If you just get everyone registered to vote and get them to the polls, the Republicans will get trounced. And they know it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll update you if that does happen. If we do get an update on the on whether Michelle McDonald is running against Kim Crockett for the Secretary of State primary. Oh, it could be delicious. We'll take a break. Come on back. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. You're just another. The progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. And you can watch us if you like. Go to watch the live stream over at Facebook at AM 950 Radio, as well as also Matt McNeil Show Progressive Citizen X. So, I have been very clear. Guns that are designed to kill human beings should not be on the market. And they shouldn't. If when someone sat down with a pencil and a graph paper to start designing it, the design was, how do I kill as many human beings as quickly as possible? It shouldn't be available. That is pretty much every assault weapon that is out there. All these ARs. They are weapons designed to kill human beings as quickly as possible because they were never meant for hunting. They were never really meant for personal defense unless you're in a zombie freaking apocalypse. Which I know you guys like to think, you like to fantasize, oh God, wouldn't it be great? Because I'm such a big freaking loser. It would be great if the zombies took over. Then I'll be the. Then I could have my little compound and the hot chicks would like me. Oh, it'd be great. I get you. That's your little weird fantasy that the world is wiped out with a zombie apocalypse, and so hence you can finally shine. Freaking losers. But no, you shouldn't have an assault weapon. It should. If you want to play with assault weapons, go join the army and they'll teach you how to respect them and B, how to use them properly. And no, as you guys like to scream, shall not be infringed. Yeah, you clowns forget the well-regulated militia part as you bunch of drunkards go on out and try to shoot beer bottles with a banana clip of 40 freaking rounds. You're so, I mean, someone has to say it. You're so damn drunk that you can't sight your weapon anymore, so you have to use an automatic weapon to basically try to shoot one beer bottle. Eventually, I'll get near it. Oh, I got one. Like it's a freaking video game. Come on. There is no place for this. And it's not just, I understand you're saying to me, well, Matt, you're a loony libby or you're the lefty of lefty. No, dude, I was in U.S. Army. The military weapons have a place in the military when you're fighting wars and stuff like that. If we ever were to get into a ground war again, I grew up in a hunting family. Hunting weapons were always around in my house. Shotguns and as well as rifles, as well as you know, and I'm not a big fan of personal defense pistols, but I'm okay with that. I wouldn't have one, but if you want to have one, that's fine. Those three things together have enough firepower to where you can defend yourself. You can go hunting. There is nothing else you need. That is not a loony lib. That's just a rational thought process. I want to read this Facebook post from a friend of mine named Michael Furtman, Michael Furtman, who is a guy that lives up north. He's an outdoors guy, and he clearly has a very intimate history with guns, and you'll understand that as I read this story. This is a post that he did up on Facebook. My two cents on the AR-15, point one. The AR-15, the semi-automatic one pull of the trigger, one shot is fired, is the civilian version of the military's M16, which is fully automatic. Both fire a .223 caliber round, whose bullet travels at about three times the speed of sound, and that tumbles once inside the body to create maximum damage. It does. It's designed to kill human beings. The entire thing is designed to kill humans. Because war is all about that kind of stuff, going back to his letter, because war is about that kind of stuff. Defenders of the ARs point out that the average hunting shotgun is also lethal. Yes, a shotgun is lethal. But go ahead, try hauling 200 to 300 rounds of shotgun shells. Shotgun shells are large and heavy. You'd need a few backpacks to carry that many, and they couldn't be loaded in any way except one at a time to the maximum of five. Reloading the average shotgun, semi-auto or not, can simply not be done with anywhere near the rapidity and of slamming in another high-capacity magazine in an AR. Yes, in the case of mass shootings, speed kills. And he's right. Those weapons are designed to lock and load, gun as many people down as quickly as possible. That's what they're meant to do. Shotguns are not designed to do that, although a shotgun will put a pretty big hole in something. It will. Point two, I was the manager of a large gun store. Now, this is, once again, Michael, this is his recounting. He was the manager of a large gun store in the early 1980s. Colt, the manufacturer of the original AR-15, still held the patent. And those ARs were available through their dealers, like us. They could be had just as easy as they were today. But no one wanted one. No one wanted one. Not for hunting. And not for mass murders. In all the years I sold guns, we only sold one Colt AR-15. Point three, at an outdoor writers conference in early 1990s, I started to see militarized versions of old hunting guns like the venerable 870 shotgun and the first ARs not manufactured by Colt being demonstrated and displayed to the outdoor press. Colt's patent on the AR-15 had lapsed, and it was then that Remington Arms started to produce then market their version. Many copycats followed. Talking with the Remington rep at that event, I asked why the big emphasis on military-style weapons all of a sudden. I'd been to their demonstrations at such events for years. Guns were nice walnut wood stocks and blue steel designed to appeal to those who fed their families ducks, venison, pheasant, or grouse. No longer. He replied that the hunter numbers were declining and established hunters rarely upgraded once they found a shotgun and rifle that suited them. He freely admitted that Remington was out to create a whole new market, and they did. Couple this with the NRA today turning dramatically right-wing. Yes, Democrats like me were once members. I was for many years. And you have the perfect storm for corporate market manipulation and paranoia fostered by the NRA. No, you don't need an AR to hunt, and you can defend your home better with a simple pump shotgun. No hunter ever starved for lack of semi-auto in calibers ill-suited for big game anyway. As an aside, most states did not allow the AR's original .223 caliber for hunting deer until the NRA and the industry-controlled National Shooting Sports Foundations lobbied states to allow it, thus bolstering the sale of these guns and allowing the gunmongers to call them sporting weapons with a straight face. This is the history for better or worse. No doubt there are many other factors at play when sick people murder many innocents. And because we are sick, they would do so even if they couldn't buy an AR-15. But we could save lives without these guns. Of that, there is no doubt. We don't need them. We don't even want them until not all that long ago. We didn't even want them until not that long ago. The cat is out of the bag, though. Many millions of these guns have been sold. Confiscation is impossible, and I would oppose it. The Post is nothing more than a history lesson. It is a report on Remington's greed, spurred by the NRA's paranoia and the National Shooting Sports Foundation's compliance to put military-style guns in the hands of anyone with money. Dead kids, cost of doing business, shoppers buying groceries shot dead, the cash registers rang elsewhere at the gun shops, grandma's grocery cart never got rung up. And that's, yeah. You almost couldn't say it better, although I think that you can basically, if you can sit there and go through the litany of things that we have confiscated, shut down, changed, made laws, seatbelts. When seatbelts became mandatory, people are, how dare you, tried it is. No one batted an eye. I'd say this. I have no problem in a person keeping their assault weapons as long as, one, they're under lock and key. There's a trigger lock on them. They're under lock and key, and they're unloaded. They cannot be changed into an automatic weapon. They cannot have a banana clip. Nope. Those are weapons of war. And the craziest part of all is I keep looking at these pictures of people with all their guns out in the middle of freaking, what the hell do you think is going to happen, you clowns? Don't you? You sit out there with your buffet of firearms trying to look like you're impressive. Look at all the guns I got. Do you complain about the cost of food, you idiot? Have you complained once about inflation? Shut up. You got $100,000 worth of guns there, you moron. Maybe, just maybe, if you didn't buy all the damn guns, you wouldn't be broke, you duh. I put a voluntary confiscation. In the sense being is that turn it in. We'll give you $1,000. $1,000 for every federal government will give you $1,000. We'll give them a tax break. We'll do like Republicans like to do. We'll give you a tax break. $1,000 tax break for every AR automatic weapon designed to kill human beings that gets turned in. You turn it on yourself. You want a few $1,000 off your taxes this year? Just turn in your weapons. And scene. Now, this is the entire point of these automatic weapons was to create a new line of weapon sales. And frankly, they have been wildly successful. And they have taken that money, bought off a lot of politicians, the primary amount in many of them in the Republican Party, and basically have ensured that no one, even with dead young children, will ever even try to say, well, maybe, just maybe, every resident in a community shouldn't have an arsenal of weapons designed for killing other human beings on the war field. I mean, maybe that's not a good idea. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Pat, hold on. I'll get your call in a moment. And plus, the kids are speaking out once again on the guns. We'll talk about that. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Yeah, man. If you have a challenge. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Who is the caller's name that called in?
I already forgot his first name since he just called, but he did bring up Donald Trump Jr.'s comments about guns today and how he's saying, well, what's to stop people from using a machete to go do these at school?
You want to know the truth is, and that's the argument they try to say.
Exactly.
And that's why that note is so pertinent. Is that, if you want to kill someone with an axe, a knife, a machete, you'll be able to kill some people, sure. But to do it, you have to be up close and personal, all right? If I can also, let me finish that thought. with an automatic weapon, what you can do is sit from a distance and fire rounds left and right, and, you know, there's not much anyone can do about it. I mean, these guns are designed to shoot rounds 200, 300 yards. You know, you're sitting in a classroom, there's nothing they can do. But, you know, it's still, if you're looking at the difference between a knife, you still have to get up to the person who uses the knife or the pipe or this. And that's their argument is, I mean, when was the last time we had, I mean, here's a simple thing. When was the last time anyone killed 19 people with an axe in this country? When was the last time anyone killed 19 people with a pipe? When was the last time anyone killed 19 people with a machete? When was the last time? You can't do what you can do with these assault weapons. And that's and I don't even know why I'm debating that guy. I mean, he seems to be a drugged out knucklehead that's basically just going to be desperate for attention from the world after his dad is gone. And so I'm sorry, I have no patience for that guy. He's destined for a reality TV celebrity TV show, and I won't have any time for that. That's all that guy is worth.
And just to finish your point too, if machetes and axes were as effective as AR-15s or other rifles, they would be the primary gun the military or the primary weapon the military would be issuing to soldiers.
Sure. Oh yeah, in a heartbeat.
Yeah, if they were that effective, then
but they don't. A machete. You know why? Because they can use an AR, and AR does a very efficient job at killing people. I think we have to criticize the film and TV industry to a point. And what I mean by that is this. Do you remember back in the 90s, I think it was, when it came to light how many dollars the film industry was taking from the cigarette industry to make sure cigarettes were prominently featured in these movies? I remember that, and just you know, they would have they'd have an actor who didn't have a cigarette, but the cigarette companies would pay for a cigarette to be in the scene, and so all of a sudden the actor was smoking. And, you know, I know that there was a debate on whether that's actually what happened with Die Hard, because he does smoke in Die Hard. But at the same time, there are people that said, oh, no, that was always part of the script. I don't know. But that was something that they had discovered, that the film industry had been paid by the cigarette companies to get cigarettes into films. I'm under the mindset, too. I mean, one of the reasons why people think you don't need a defense pistol or a shotgun to, you know, shoot an intruder in your house, that you have to have a freaking semi-automatic weapon is because they feel as if they've seen too many movies where guys get shot 6, 7, 8, 9 times and they're still coming. No, that's not the real world. And I've talked about this so many damn times. It's not even funny. That's a movie. That's TV. That's not real. In the real world, that bullet comes out of that gun designed to do as much damage as it can do to a body when it hits. It hits the body and explodes out. You cannot have the entire narrative that we have on guns has been filtered through an NRA spokesperson to make it, only cool kids have the ARs, you know. That's founding fathers. No, that's not what this is all about. It's not about that. It's just, this is insanity. It's insanity to sit there and say this is what the founding fathers wanted. No, it's not. Not even close. You are an amazing idiot. You are just dumb as a brick. If you sit there and you say the founding fathers wanted people opening fire in elementary schools and slaughtering kids, because even though that's not the perfect world, you know, if we start regulating that, that would be worse. No. Or the ones that sit there and say the founding fathers, you know what they did? They wanted us to kick in the doors and gun them down if we disagreed with them. That's what they wanted. No, you don't understand a damn thing. And frankly, if you believe either one of those things, you should not have a gun. You're slaughtering kids. You're slaughtering kids at an insane rate at this point. No, this is insanity. These guns need to go away. And by the way, once again, as I've said numerous times, the kids in Generation Z, these kids that are coming in after the millennials, they've had it. They've had it, and they are not taking anyone's crap anymore. Minnesota students are planning to walk out on Tuesday afternoon in protest of gun violence. Youth activists are encouraging students across Minnesota to participate in the walkout planned for 12:30 today in the wake of the mass elementary school shooting at Uvalde, Texas, which saw 19 children and two teachers shot dead by an 18-year-old with an AR. In Minneapolis, a rally will be held by students who plan to advocate for more mental health resources and further restrictions on guns. Minnesota Teen Activists, a large youth-led community organization group, says a press conference is planned for 1 p.m. before students march to Gold Medal Park to U.S. Bank Stadium, where they'll hold a rally at 2:15. We all deserve to feel safe and protected while buying weekly groceries or going to the school to learn and build a future for ourselves, Minnesota teen activists stated. It's not normal to continue to have to mourn others who have lost, whose lives were cut short. On Friday, Minneapolis Public Schools officials sent a message to parents saying the district respects the students' First Amendment right to peacefully assemble and will not discipline students for peacefully protesting. While Minneapolis Public Schools echoes the calls from students and many others to end school violence, this event is not sanctioned or affiliated with the Minneapolis Public Schools. We have acknowledged that our students and community have been deeply affected by the events of Uvalde, Texas, as well as the second anniversary of the murder of George Floyd. The district continued. Numerous youth-led protests have occurred across the country since last week's mass shooting. It's that simple. You've got a generation of people that are coming up who are saying enough's enough. Now, granted, I think what the Republicans have figured out here is that if you control the Supreme Court, you pretty much control a good chunk of the country. That you can just basically constantly challenge any law that's passed by a Democrat or any executive order by a Democratic president. And as long as you have a, you know, in the pocket of the Republican Party and Republican lobbyist Supreme Court, they can knock down anything. But eventually that will change. But it can only change if the Democrats start voting. And not just this election, but every stinking election. Let me make sure it's very clear. If this year, 2022, and 2024, and 2026, and 2028, if all four of those years, Democrats got out and voted in mass, not only would they have overwhelming majorities in the House and Senate, they would have overwhelming majorities in the state, Minnesota House and Senate too. But Republicans, by the time we got to the end of this decade, would be singing a very different tune because they know that they would be the permanent minority party. If they don't basically come on out there and say, okay, yes, all right, we're for regulating assault weapons. Oh, okay, I guess a woman does have a right to have a choice because that's separation of church and state. It's that simple. If you just show up every election, the Democrats can take control of this. But the Republicans are saying, you're not going to do that. We can basically torch your house and you'll find something on freaking TikTok to watch as opposed to go vote me out of office. And half the time, they're damn right. Half the time, they're right. Our outrage senses in this country are only as good as the meme you've made for Twitter. And so they're basically daring you. I mean, they're daring you now to show up and vote. Come on. What else do we have to take away from you guys? You guys going to go, oh, no. Stranger Things is on Netflix. Oh, can't watch. Can't come out and vote this time, can you? It is truly disturbing how much is the Republicans are able to control with so little of the vote. That's the disturbing part. So, once again, as I said earlier, you get on out there, you vote. If you vote, they lose. It's that simple. And you have to vote every single election. That's how you do it. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Tornadoes did hit the western part of the state. So it's time for my reminder of what did the Republicans do back in 2009. We'll talk about that when we do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Oh, we do. I have to do an update here. Is McDonald going to run for the Secretary of State's race? Do we have that yet? Corey Heppel says he won't file for the race. So he's I forgot about him. hey, you remember that guy who's gonna run purple and fashion was a key? I don't know what the whole platform. I had to look a lot better. I mean, he was gonna have some standard rules. There's gonna be a dress code here for Minnesota. Let's just be honest about it. Not seeing him. I have not seen anything from McDonald, Michelle McDonald, and whether she's going to challenge Kim Crockett. And once again, the report from Broadcorp is that Crockett was working the phones hard to get McDonald to not run. So, yeah. All right. So, a tragedy yesterday. And you saw that storm build. Ugh, it was ugly. It was really, really ugly. The estimated 75 homes were reportedly damaged or destroyed when a suspected powerful tornado ripped through the small town of Farada, in west central Minnesota on Monday. The apparent twister shredded homes along the shore of Maple Lake, which is located on the south side of Farada, which is about a home to about 160 people about 5 miles south of Alexandria. Aerial footage of the aftermath shows devastation, and pictures from the ground reveal metal wrapped around twisted trees and tattered homes. A man who lives 3 to 4 miles north of Glenwood, located south of Farada, said he could hear the sound of what he thought was a tornado north of town, adding that he was certain a tornado passed just north of his home and the pressure sucked his attic door open. Damage was then reported out in Eagle Bend at 5:03, the report of the National Weather Service saying it was likely tornadic. About 80 miles of terrain are between Milan, Starbuck, Farada, and Eagle Bend. What is now up to the National Weather Service is to determine if a long-track tornado caused the damage or if it was multiple touchdowns in different tornadoes and straight-line winds. Tornadoes are nasty, man. And once again, before I say what I'm about to say, let me preface this. Are you running the tape, Brett?
I am, yes.
By all means, this is a basic function of government. When a natural disaster hits, make sure you send out whatever they need. By all means. All right? You know, we had a tornado here in Minneapolis back in 2009. Smacked into our friends over at the Electric Fetus on the south side of town, but because there's a heat bubble over the downtown, it shot over the downtown and then slammed hard into North Minneapolis. That was bad. A lot of people's houses were destroyed. A lot of damage to buildings. It was rough. And I don't know if you remember or not, but the Republican Party refused to help the people of Minneapolis. They refused. Now, I personally think it was because black people, and that was it. I mean, I think that was kind of it. They politicized state emergency funds for natural disasters because the people that were needing help were not their good old boys. You know, it was inner city minority families, and they purposely did not offer them any help. And as a matter of fact, a lot of those jackass Republicans got out there in front of the cameras, and I don't know if you remember the phrase they kept using. Oh, they used it all the time. Those people, they said that, those people need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. They need to help themselves. Seriously, they couldn't say that enough. You people in North Minneapolis, and you could just hear they wanted to say black people in North. They wanted to so bad. You minority people, you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And they did not help the city of Minneapolis. You know, a few people, I looked out where the damage was and the house and the center seats that are out there. We actually have a few people whose districts were hit by tornadoes yesterday, but were the same people who insisted that when tornadoes strike, that those people just need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. You remember that? I think that's Bill Engelbritson. Oh, who doesn't love Alaskan fishing? Oh, it's fantastic. He sent it District 8. That was part of this. He was back in St. Paul when they denied Minneapolis tornado relief. because of those people. Paul Anderson, representative from 12B, he was part of that group of, we're not going to help you. And, oh, Mr. Bootstrap himself, Tori Westrum, he was a House member back then, if I'm not mistaken. I think Ingebrigtsen was, too. They're House members back then. But he basically was, 12. He's now the Senate District 12. Back then, they were all for not helping tornado victims. The state should not help tornado victims because they need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. That's their standard. So by all means, give Paul Anderson and Tori Westrum and Bill Ingebrigtsen a call and ask, you know, I remember back in 2009 when Minneapolis got hit by a tornado and you guys didn't want to give any aid to the tornado victims of Minneapolis. Funny story. That actually had to wait for the Democrats to take control. But that being said, you guys didn't do that. Now, are you saying you guys don't need any help from the state? You don't need any of the metro area's taxpayer dollars to pull up those bootstraps for you? We've already had this. This is not a new show for me. This is not a new talking point. Every time there's a tornado in an area where Republicans represent, I can go through there and find Republicans who insisted back in 2009 the city of Minneapolis did not need any tornado relief because those people need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. That's what they kept saying. And I believe the government has a responsibility to take care of their citizens, but they didn't at that time because black people needed help. And so they didn't help North Minneapolis. But now all of a sudden, I'm sure already they've contacted the governor saying,
we're innocent, sweet salt of the earth people. We need help.
By all means, send it out to them. But I don't mind reminding you jackasses of your hypocrisy. Hour two of the show, that's coming up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Indeed. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Brett, just one little thing here. This is from our friend Dr. Joe, our COVID model expert. He posted this, and I thought this was quite good. 1967, Jane Mansfield is killed when her car runs into the rear end of a tractor trailer. Since then, all trailers have a DOT bar at the rear to keep the cars from going under them. Okay. 1982, 7 people died when Tylenol packaging was tampered with. Since then, it takes a PhD, channel locks, and a sharp object to get into a bottle of pills. So, agreed. 1995, a bombing using a certain kind of fertilizer solution grade ammonium nitrate killed 168 people, so the government imposed severe restrictions on the purchasing of that fertilizer. 2001, one person attempts to blow up a plane with a shoe bomb. Since then, all air travelers have to take off their shoes for scanning before they're allowed to get on board. And since 1968, 1,516,863 people have died from guns in American soil. Gun violence kills an average of 168 people every 2 days. Now the problem apparently can't be solved except with thoughts and prayers. It's amazing when if we had someone getting arsenic and say, and I'm not even going to suggest it, but somehow is putting it out in the system to where people were consuming it and dying. The federal government and every single Republican would be frantically screaming, you got to make sure we lock this stuff down tight, that this can't just be out anywhere because this is dangerous. There would be rules about food safety. There would be rules. They would do so much things. The Republicans just now have said that they are not for raising the age of gun purchases for assault weapons from 18 to 21, even though an insane amount of these people that have shot up these schools in the last 10 years has become 18 to 21-year-olds who've gotten these guns. So it is 952-946-6205. Twins won first game today, didn't they?
They did, yes.
What was the score of that?
I believe it was 8-2.
There you go. They're a better team than Kansas. They did not, how they split with Kansas City, that made me mad. They should not have split that series. They should have won that series. They should beat up on Detroit. Detroit's not good.
No.
What's the opposite of good? Bad. They're bad. That's what it is.
That's Detroit and Kansas City.
Exactly.
Cleveland and Chicago are at least kind of mediocre. You could make the argument, but even that's a stretch.
Twins are doing everything right. I'm not going to get too upset. I mean, they just, you know, they're losing games here and there they should not lose. Not many. And I hope that doesn't come back to bite us in the caboose. I mean, if it's in the rate this is going, we might have this division actually sewn up by, you know, at some point early. But if it stays tight and all of a sudden you got those three or four games, which you should have won. Ugh, I always hate that. But so they play tonight again, don't they? Detroit?
Doubleheader, correct. Yeah.
Well, it's not a doubleheader. Doubleheader is the team comes off the field. They send the rakes out. Get me your next lineup card. Let's play. That's a doubleheader. Have you ever gone to a Major League Baseball doubleheader?
Not that type of doubleheader, no.
I have. They used to have those. They're fantastic. I mean, you were there for a day. You think golf takes a long time. I think that's what happened. I think the wives of America said, no. Enough with the doubleheaders.
Now, here's the question. Were you able to pay for just one ticket or
No, you bought the two tickets, two games. Okay. But it was a discounted rate if you were there for both games.
Ah, okay.
And the reason why is because they're trying to get people in that early game during a weekday or, you know, there usually is one game that's a little tough, especially if the team's not good. It's sit where you want today. You know, build yourself a lounge chair. Anything else fun that you've been doing? Anything streaming wise on the streaming services? Anything you're catching out there?
No, just right now doing some baseball still. Right now, finishing up some section playoffs for a couple schools, local in town. So I've been busy with that for the past few days and the next week or so since baseball they do double elimination. So there's a lot of games that can be played in a short amount of time.
You know what I've been up to lately?
What's that?
Validation.
Validation.
Validation, my friend. So, I don't know if you've caught. Have you caught any of Stranger Things? You're not a big fan of Stranger Things, are you?
No, I actually have not watched Stranger Things, no.
Love Stranger Things. They capture the 1980s so perfectly, it's not even funny. As a matter of fact, can I say the most 80s thing I've ever seen on that show, and I'm going to say something that happened in this season, but it's not a massive plot point or anything. There's a point where Eleven clocks a girl that's been mercilessly teasing her, just brutally teasing Eleven, just horrible to Eleven, just a horrible human being. And Eleven clocks her with a skate in the grill. Nice. Mm. Now, granted, violence bad and all these things, but nothing is more 1980s than the kid who has been tormented by their bullies. Tormented in front of teachers, in front of parents. Everyone knows this. And we're not talking about verbal. We're talking physical, you know, actually hurting them at times. This just abuse. And the kid that gets bullied punches back once. And the first thing out of every adult's mouth is, you need to learn how to get your temper under control. Jesus. You want to try to police this crap up, you know, the constant teasing, which you're laughing about in the corner and don't tell me you're not. That is the most 80s things about that whole show. I mean, there is some things in that show are brilliant. There was an anti-smoking sticker on one of the schools that I haven't seen since the 1980s. It was brilliant how they find these things.
Oh, that's got to be fun to put on. Yeah, when they can go that far back and find some of this stuff. Yeah.
There's a key point in the show, which I will not share, that involves the song from the British sensational singer from the 1980s and 70s and 80s, and even today, she still puts stuff out today, Kate Bush. And in 1985, I believe it was, off of Hounds of Love, she had a song called Running Up That Hill. And, you know, deal with God, running up that hill. And that song plays a major plot point in this show. Not going to say anything else. It's now the number one song on iTunes, a 1985 song from Kate Bush, which, by the way, Kate Bush is freaking awesome. Hounds of Love is great. The Dreaming is a better album. It's a better album. And frankly, it's a top five album of all time for me. It's the template for every female alternative artist that came after her. It's unbelievable. Go get The Dreaming. Go get Hounds of Love. Go buy her whole catalog. She's good. Back in the 1980s, when I was a kid, I was the nerdy kid with the Dungeons and Dragons and the Doctor Who and Rush and Kate Bush, and I was every and here we are today. Glorious victory. Validation. It was about three decades after that Doctor Who became popular. mm-hmm. was hugely popular. Still is quite popular.
Oh, see, you're a Doctor Who fan before it was big.
Oh, it was a long time. Rush. Now, Rush was a little bit more. They had their moving pictures, big album. They had their followers, but still, a lot of people. It was kind of a fringe band. It was still kind of a cult band. It's still there. Dungeons and Dragons. I'm going to roll up a nerd. Yay! That's a 20-sided nerd.
Yeah, at least today, nerd culture can kind of be cool. But yeah, like earlier days, it was not. No.
My friend Steve Clay and I, when I was in high school, he says, you got to see this artist. And I said, I just fell in love with her. And here it is. Here it is. Here it is. 37 years later. 37 years later. Victory. I was way ahead of everyone else. Welcome to the party, pal. About time you got here.
That's building it for a long-term victory.
Oh, you think that
well
all
thought out.
You think all those people who mocked and ridiculed me for my legs and things? No, I'm rubbing it in your face. I dominate. Woo! That's it. That's it.
Doing some Facebook stalking tonight, posting messages. You remember who made fun of me at 85?
You remember when you took down my battle dwarf? Well, let me tell you something now, pal.
Get those zingers in now.
I rolled a 16 on charisma, and I'm ready to take you on. There you go. No, it's not going to happen. No, that's... Although I should do that tonight. That's what am I doing tonight? I am undoing all this good feeling I have.
Yeah, yeah. Getting revenge. That's what you're doing.
Oh, that's what it is. It's just bitter, selfish, petty, small Matt. That's all it is. And wow, welcome on in. The water's fine, kids. Kate Bush, how about that one out of left field? I was looking at Billboard. They haven't put the numbers out yet. I'm looking at Billboard and seeing if they ranked her. If she's going to get back into the top 40 charts. She hit 30 in the United States back in 1985. So if she does better than that, that was not a success story I was picking up at the beginning of 2022. Kate Bush.
How often does that actually happen with music where, you know, it gets bigger than it was originally?
Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah.
Shake it, Twist and Shout from the Beatles. That song was a secondary song, but when we released it with Ferris Bueller's Day Off, that was huge. Huge. That was, I think it hit number one. That was 25 years after it initially came out, I think. Victory. Go watch it. Stranger Things is good. It is good. It's worthwhile. But there is always that moment. And a shout out to Abby Wolf, who is a fantastic singer, and she actually has done Kate Bush concerts. I'm sure your concert schedule is starting to fill up and fill up fast. I will have to go catch one of the Abby Wolf shows. That's for sure. 952-946-6205. Democrat of the day coming up a little bit later on, Kate Luthner from Senate District 32. But right now, Patrick Cooligan, right?
Yeah, Patrick Cooligan of the Minnesota Reformer. Today, we are talking about how in the Minneapolis Police Department, they have a few officers who are averaging over 100 hours of overtime and getting close to about $300,000 per year. So we're talking about overtime policies with the MPD, and then also a few editorials on why AR-15s need to be banned. And then this one's not so much an editorial, but I think it's a good story talking about how there's a movement to try to preserve some of this art from murals that we saw back in 2020 in the wake of the George Floyd murder and the work being done to try to preserve some of these murals to make sure that they don't go by the wayside, since a lot of them are made on plywood, which is very fragile.
We'll get to those. They're working 100 hours of overtime per week?
Not per week, that I saw. No, but one of these guys was making close to $300,000 per year.
Just on overtime.
Yeah, just because of the overtime.
I'm glad he's not doing 100 hours of overtime per week, because that's 20 hours a day they're working.
Per week. Yeah, yeah. I should be clear. It was 100 hours total with the usual 40.
Okay.
Then you're doing, like 60 hours of overtime.
Okay.
But either way, that's still a lot for someone who's in law enforcement and carrying around an armed weapon. Yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking.
Thank God you're sleepy. All right. Here's Patrick Cooligan from the Minnesota Reformer right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson here on a Tuesday afternoon. And right now we are joined by Patrick Cooligan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Great resource for the latest in news and politics in Minnesota over at MinnesotaReformer.com, as we'll be talking through some news stories and columns that have been in the Reformer for the past few days or so. Patrick, thanks so much for joining me on the show today. Good to have you with us.
Good to be here, as always.
Absolutely. So I want to start off today talking about a couple of editorials that appeared in the Reformer. And this first one has to do with Well, banning AR-15 assault rifles, since these, of course, have been prominent in many mass shootings that we've been seeing across the country over the past few years. And what I like about the editorial, which is in The Reformer, Patrick, is that it really does break down how guns of the 1700s, when the Constitution was originally written, are much different than the guns today. And he really does a good job breaking down how the AR-15 can do so much more damage than a musket you would find in the 1700s. And I think that's an important point to bring up when it comes to talking about gun safety, is to make sure to put things in context when you inevitably get that rebuttal of, well, the Second Amendment says we have a right to bear arms.
Right. And he's specifically pushing back. It's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, but I think it's a serious point that if you're going to read the Constitution as it was originally written, as the originalists want us to do, or the textualists want us to do, then people should be able to have muskets. And that's okay. That should be what you're entitled to under the so-called right to bear arms. And obviously what we're seeing now in terms of this kind of weaponry is just so far out of the minds of the founders of the country and the authors of the Constitution. I don't think this is what they had in mind. What you hear now, the argument is that they always intended for the right to bear arms to be able to fight some kind of authoritarianism. And therefore, we need to be able to collect AR-15s to fight off some sort of, in case the authoritarians take over the government. But then what happened was, when an actual authoritarian took over, meaning the previous president who just left office and attempted to override a free and fair election with a coup on January 6th and events surrounding that, all these same people lined up behind him for the most part. And so it really makes you wonder how authentic their fear of authoritarianism is.
Yeah, absolutely, because I would be with you, too, that generally, if you're going to try to fight the tyrannical U.S. government, given the weapons that the U.S. military has, they're probably going to win every time. It doesn't really matter how many AR-15s you have. And, that's something very important to point out, that, you're not going to be able to overthrow a tyrannical government, as they like to say. I also like in the piece, Jay Anderson, by the way, wrote this in The Reformer. You can find that column over at MinnesotaReformer.com. He does break down that basically with AR-15s, you can fire 400 rounds per minute or more, and that's quite a bit more than what you would be able to fire with a shotgun or a handgun, or even if we're going back to the 1700s and 1800s, a musket. I mean, that does put things into perspective when you can potentially fire 400 rounds per minute or more, especially when you put something like a bump stock on these types of weapons. I think that's important to put these things into perspective with how dangerous these guns are, and really you don't need to be firing 400 rounds per minute to go hunting or something like that.
Right, that's what the guy in Las Vegas used. He had a modified, he used a bump stock to modify it, and it turned it essentially into a machine gun. Machine guns are illegal in the United States. You can get one, but you have to go through quite a process to get one. And which really raises an interesting question, is that they tell us all the time about how gun control doesn't work. Because if somebody wants to be evil, they're going to be evil and so forth. But we do have gun control on machine guns, and it does seem to work pretty well, I think, because you don't see a lot of machine guns around. So I think that's something that the gun rights advocates have to answer for. First of all, why are we allowing these modifications that would enable one of these weapons to fire 400 rounds a minute? And secondly, if gun control doesn't work, then why is it working so well with machine guns?
can find more about that column over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Again, MinnesotaReformer.com. I want to move on now to, I guess I'll combine these two stories that have appeared in the Minnesota Reformer. One has to do with Minneapolis artists memorialize lives lost and challenge policing and economic systems, as well as, this is somewhat related, Memorialize the Movement Project aims to preserve and exhibit plywood art from the 2020 unrest that we, of course, saw in the wake of the murder of George Floyd. And this is a really cool project that they have going on right now, I think, Patrick, this Memorialize the Movement Project, because so often when we saw back in 2020, a lot of these great art pieces that were made in the wake of what happened were made on plywood, which, of course, is, well, very fragile material. So I like this idea that at least with Memorialize the Movement, they're trying to save some of these pieces of art and make sure that they can still be displayed.
Yeah, I think this is a really great project, and one of the sometimes goodness can flow out of an evil event, as it has in this case. And the problem with the, all these great murals is that they are on this plywood, which is not a very sturdy material, especially when it's being moved around a lot and subject to the weather. So some folks are trying to preserve it, and we got a couple of student journalists who were visiting up here, and they did some really good reporting on this project.
Absolutely. And staying along those same lines, I also want to talk about city council person in Minneapolis, Jeremiah Ellison, who, kind of again piggybacking on this, wants to put together a movement to memorialize state violence. And in fact, he wants every paintable wall on the third floor in Minneapolis of the city hall to be painted with images of people who have been killed by police over the past 50 years. And this is quite an ambitious project, and also kind of depressing to think about that there probably could be enough space to actually memorialize all the people that have been killed by police over the past 50 years or so. But again, to at least memorialize these types of things, I think does create conversation where people can say, oh, what's this memorial about, or what's this mural about? And it does create conversation about what actually happened. So this is an interesting idea being proposed by Ellison in Minneapolis and others of trying to memorialize what's been happening.
Yeah, I when I read this, edited this piece, I didn't actually know that council member Jeremiah Ellison was a muralist in his own right. And he, drawing inspiration from Diego Rivera work in Mexico City, he'd like to see all of people who've been killed by Minneapolis police, their images shown in Minneapolis City Hall. I mean, that would be a striking act of political art. I don't think it's going to happen until Councilmember Ellison gets elected mayor, maybe, but it's certainly an interesting idea, and again, another way in which that terrible event has led to some positive things.
And again, it's another way for people when they're able to make art and react to what happens. It is a way to channel your anger and some of those feelings of hopelessness, as I know. That was even brought up with Lisa Kelly, who is one of the people who is part of the Memorialize the Movement group. And she was talking about how it is a way where you can channel your anger and your hopelessness through art. And I think that's something we've always seen throughout history, is that art is a great way to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And so now the key is, how do we preserve that art that was really, that flowered out of those events? Because a lot of it is on, is fragile, and it ought to be preserved, not only for the art itself, but also for history.
Again, you can find both of those pieces over at MinnesotaReformer.com, talking about how Minneapolis artists are working to memorialize the lives lost to policing. And then also a little bit more information, they have another piece that is talking about the Memorialize the Movement in Minneapolis. Find those again over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Last story I wanted to talk with you about, Patrick, has to do with overtime for Minneapolis police officers. As I was reading through the Reformer newsletter this morning that was written by Dina, and she talked about how in the city, a couple of cops last year made over $300,000 per year, which definitely jumped out at me because typically when you think of police officers, you don't typically think of people who are making well over six figures per year. So tell us how this was possible. Could this really be all through overtime that you could have potentially police officers making well over something like $300,000 a year? That number seems astronomical to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think we figured out that this guy's working like the guy who made $375,000 roughly. He's working 15 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's if you do the math on just a straight time plus the time and a half for overtime. So, you know, what's happened is Minneapolis has lost 300 police or so, and they've struggled to hire people to replace them. And so there's just they've built a lot of overtime into their budget. And so now we have police officers who are racking up huge, huge amounts of overtime.
Yeah, and we were talking about how the one police sergeant who made over $300,000 a year, that is Police Sergeant Stephen McBride, who, yeah, would be working well over 100 hours per week, which, I don't know, that seems like a really dicey situation to force police, well, not necessarily force, but have police officers work that often, because like any human being, once you start getting beyond 40, 50, 60 hours per week, your judgment usually isn't as good, you don't have as good as reaction time, you of course reach fatigue, and I think it's important to point out that former Minneapolis police officer Muhammad Noir, who shot Justine Ruzic a few years ago, he had just finished a 10-hour police, or he had just clocked in for a 10-hour police shift on the night he shot and killed Ruzic just after he finished a 7-hour shift moonlighting as a security guard. So it is very concerning when you have police officers working that often and that much, not because they not necessarily can't do the job, just because when you're working well over 80, 90 hours a week, your judgment usually goes down as well as your reaction time, and that's typically not someone you would want to have that is in law enforcement that would potentially be fatigued in that situation.
Right. I don't think this has been shown in across industries, whether it's medicine or the law, journalism, or certainly police work. Once you're fatigued, that's when you start making mistakes. And in the case of police officers, the stakes are so high that it doesn't really seem like a good idea to have police officers working this number of hours and facing the risks of poor decision-making when they're fatigued. I mean, also, just when you're tired, you get ornery. I mean, at least I do. And yeah, that's not what we want as police officers are dealing with the public. Clearly, there's already a huge problem with MPD and community relations. And I don't see how it's going to get any better when you've got guys working this many hours.
Well, fortunately, you and I working in the media industry are not familiar with the overtime, going into overtime, by the way, saying that tongue-in-cheek, obviously. That, typically with budget cuts in media, yeah, we're very familiar with that. But final point I was going to bring up is the city doing anything in terms of trying to curb overtime, or is this largely at the discretion of the police department? Is it possible for the city council to put a cap on overtimes or even the mayor's office, or is this something that largely is up to the police department themselves?
Well, we've seen where the city council has tried to, in the recent past, has tried to drive some policy with its, the only way it can do so is with the purse power of the purse. But we've also seen the police department, which is under the direct authority of the mayor, more or less ignore the council. And the problem is that until they get more officers, and they're having trouble recruiting, they're going to have to rely on overtime just to cover some basic service calls. So that's kind of the fix that we're in.
Yeah, it is a good point. Of course, when you're short-staffed, you really don't have that much of an option either. So we'll have to keep following along and seeing what happens, if anything can be changed, at least with overtime or the police hiring more officers, or, of course, just changing the law enforcement structure in Minneapolis altogether, which, of course, we saw during the general election back in 2020 when Minneapolis was able to vote on that amendment. Well, you can find more on all of those stories at MinnesotaReformer.com for the latest in news and politics in Minnesota. Again, go to MinnesotaReformer.com. We have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer. Patrick, as always, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it.
Always good to be here.
And let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Democrat of the day today, we head up to Senate District 32. Kate Luthner is a candidate we had on last time we did this a few years back, and she has decided to run for Senate District 32 this time. She's kind enough to join us today to talk about her decision to do so and her campaign. Kate, thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks so much.
Now, I have to remind you. The minute I called you, you said, "Oh, by the way, from the last time we talked, I watched Jaws," and I'm like,
"I watched Jaws."
So why don't you explain? Was it something that you had not seen it before? And I was like, I was stunned by that.
Yes, you were stunned. So you had other people on ahead of me, so I kind of joined into the program, and you were talking about movies and movies that scared you, They're like Jaws, number one, Jaws, and I'm like, I've never actually seen it, so. When my youngest daughter wanted to watch a scary movie one night, I'm like, well, let's watch Jaws. So it held up, but I've thought of you for the last 2 years, the movie Jaws.
Oh, that's nice.
And, you know, Democrats.
a massive shark attack movie, Matt McNeil. How old was your child before you subjected her to this movie?
Well, she is my kid who likes horror, and
okay.
Today is actually her 10th birthday, so today we just finished singing and eating cake.
Wonderful. So happy birthday.
She was nine.
Oh,
thank
nine.
You. So she was nine, and she was into it. She's all about the scary movies.
When she gets to be about 14 or 15, the 1982 version of The Thing with, Kurt Russell, holy cow, that one still scares me today. That one's a fantastic film.
So that's what it is. I'm just going to get movie recommendations for you every couple of years.
Well, you can do that anytime, Kate. I'd love to have you on for that. Absolutely fine.
We could call in, talk movies. So you mentioned I chose to run in 32. I got redistricted.
Yeah.
So you don't get to pick where you run.
Well, they redistricted you, but did make the choice. You ran last time. Why did you make the choice? You said to yourself, you know what? I'm running again.
I'm running again. So before I ran in 31, which was a very Republican-leaning district, and I ran last time because somebody needed to run. So somebody needs to be on the Democratic ticket so people can vote.
Amen.
And today is the last day that people can. Actually, I think it's closed now. 4 o'clock it closed. But it's really important to show that we have representation, actually, on both sides of the coin. So you need a Republican to vote for, you need a Democrat to vote for. And there was nobody in 31. So a friend said, hey, why don't you try this thing? So I did. And it was a really hard district to run in, but I learned a lot about the system, about what we're fighting for, and that there's a lot of people who care deeply. And even though they feel like everyone around them is Republican, it's not true. I've door knocked. I've seen the stats. There's a lot of pockets of blue all over what you would consider a red district. And then redistricting happened, and I knew I would be redistricted. I am on an edge. My house is very much the edge of a district, and it's a new edge now. I didn't know if I'd go north, south, east, or west. I had no idea. So I took 2 years, not off, but I took 2 years to be the best school board member I could possibly be. COVID really did a lot for school boards, between trying to keep kids safe and educated, and then dealing with a lot of the political stuff, for the nicest word possible, that came out from parents and some advocacy groups that school boards have had to deal with the last couple of years. So a little bit of a proving ground. And when I got redistricted south. So I am in Columbus, and the district is predominantly Blaine. So 80% of the population is in Blaine. And then there's some in Columbus and Ham Lake and Andover. So that's the district, is Blaine, Columbus, Ham Lake, and Andover, and only slivers of Ham Lake and Andover.
Kate, I want to give you a lot of praise. You're a school board member for the last 2 years. Dear Lord, bless you. You had to deal with some of the toughest experiences a lot of people had, and you stuck through it. Just, you know, there's a reason I like you, Kate. It's your, you know, bless you for going through that. That must have been rough.
It was. We had death threats. We had briefings about, we had to move our meetings because we had a giant plate glass window. We had, like, here's the exit if you need to get out the other way. So, you know, I wish we didn't need to, but you know what they say? Like, I don't have to like what you say, but I'll defend your right to say it. Like, words don't actually hurt. Guns do. So when we started getting real threats, that was a thing. But we have a great relationship with the police in Forest Lake. So they were at all our meetings. Mm-hmm. And so they still stop by every meeting. And if there's any rough characters in the audience, they sit with us. And they make sure that it's everything's going safe and sound. So that's... I wish I didn't have to, but I'm glad I have good backup. So, but it's really important for the kids to make sure that they have an education and schools that care and walk the line between what we can do to keep them safe and what we need to do to get them educated.
Your district, with the redistricting here as well, I'm looking at the map of it. It is interesting because that is a district that has been trending, especially Blaine. The southern part of Blaine, the western part of Blaine has been trending blue. It's a lot of these areas. I got moved too in my district. I was in Minnesota 5. I'm now in Minnesota 3. You know, a lot of things changed. And a lot of districts, which at one point you'd say to yourself, well, that's going to be a hard win. Now it's not nearly. And I mean, as you said, you get out there and you door knock. Your district definitely is now a lot bluer than it was before.
It's much more blue. I mean, I couldn't have gotten more red. Well, I guess I could have, but yeah. I was very red before. And now I've heard it said it's slightly more blue than red. I've heard it's slightly more red than blue. I'm going to call it 50-50, and I'm going to work really hard to get some of those lean Republicans voting for me. I've got name recognition in Columbus as a school board member, and this is the redder side of the line. So hopefully people see me as a caring, rational go-getter. And when people say, how are we going to win this election? I'm going to say, I'm going to be loud and tenacious. And they're like, well, what are you going to be like in the Senate? I'm like, also loud and tenacious. So that's, I call my style aggressive optimism. So I don't think we're going to hell in a handbasket, but I do think that we really need to work hard to make sure we're going in the right direction.
Okay, I've got a new favorite candidate. This is I like,
you say that every week, Matt.
No, I don't. Oh, there's, I could tell you stories. I like that idea because that's it. That's it exactly. That's it in a nutshell. I don't care if you're a moderate Democrat, traditional Democrat, liberal Democrat. I don't care. If you're a proud Democrat and you're out there pushing that the message that you believe in, then you will win. And I think that that's what really scares Republicans, is that this idea that the DFL has to be these, oh, don't hit us again kind of things. No, we've got a strong policies. We've got the policies that are the popular policies. We're looking out for all Minnesotans. You better fear us, because we've got the policy to go with what we're saying.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, I can't even see where the Republicans are coming from anymore. For a while there, I was like, I can see both sides. I really can. You know, we need balance. I still believe in balance. But the Republican Party has shifted so far that it feels like they just don't care about anybody who doesn't make $300,000 or more. And I'm being generous there. It's probably more like $500,000 or more. Mm-hmm. Because all the tax cuts they talk about are for the upper echelons. All the changes they want really will put money more in their pockets. And they have a great way of making you feel like it's for you. Like you're a temporarily inconvenienced millionaire. Oh, we can't have this tax because it might affect me someday. So they've done a fabulous job on their marketing. But for real, you're right. Democrats are the ones that take care of people. They're for healthcare and schools and education and safety. And that's why I'm running. I'm running for education is my number one top priority. There is a lot that's right with our Minnesota system. We are not, but we're starting to fall in our national stats. And there's people in Senate who are doing their very best to disrupt the process. They're voting for zeros for increases for spending, and they blocked the entire education bill at the end of the session. And they did it to spite everybody. They just knelt on the, what were they saying? They knelt on the 1 yard line and ran out the clock because they feel like they'll get all the money next time. So I'm hoping we get all the money next time and we can do even better with it and make them regret walking away from that deal.
I think you're exactly right in your position on the school board that gives you that front look where you're like, okay, wait a minute here. The entire Republican Senate education bill was a few million dollars for reading programs, and that's it. Nothing for individual schools, nothing for this. That was one of the most irresponsible. That just told me they weren't serious. They're just not serious, and they don't like public schools.
No, and Senator Chamberlain, his pet project of that letters program, it's a great program, it really is, but he just didn't want to hear a lot about the rest of what needs to be done. And spending that has an earmark on it that says you must do it for this, I can't believe Republicans make this, because that's not local control, and that's one of their party platforms. They just say, oh no, you can only use this money in this very specific way. And for example, Forest Lake already has the letters program. We invested in it years ago, so it was yet to be seen if that bill even passed, what would happen to districts that already went down that path. So I am much more for money on the cross subsidy to fill in the gaps, money on the formula so that districts can do what they need to do with money, and letting school boards and school administration make the choice that is most effective for their area and not micromanage, because that's where we found a lot of our problems is the you can do this, you can't do that with this money. And we don't need creative accounting. We really just don't need more of that.
One of the things I do like about your website too, and looking at your issues here, let's talk, I mean, obviously firearms are something that we were talking a lot about today after the tragedy in Texas. And the idea of, do you have weapons that were designed to kill human beings on a battlefield available for 18-year-olds and to be used to slaughter young children? I grew up in a hunting family. I was in the Army. I was U.S. Army. And I was so, I mean, I know this issue fairly well. The reality is, you know, the one of the things that whenever you talk about, let's put some common sense, just common sense regulations in place. The first thing people accuse you of is trying to ban all guns. That's not true, because they're trying to derail the discussion we can have about responsible firearms.
Right. Hyperbole is the best friend of the marketing and the meme culture. And I'm for responsible gun ownership. And I mean, I grew up on the East Coast. I was not part of a hunting family. I did not grow up in the culture of this, but I moved here nearly 20 years ago and I worked at Polaris, where hunting is the bread and butter. That puts food on people's table, literally puts food on people's table that I know. And those people have a very, very good relationship with their firearms. They teach it. It's family bonding time. It's not, and they're not using it irresponsibly. And I think that the education side of things is there. And like you said, how did this get into the hands of an 18-year-old is beyond me. I know we talked briefly when you were saying, hey, come on. And I was thought, do I want to talk about that tragic thing? Because I have a 10-year-old. I have a fourth grader that I drop off at school. And, you know, I dropped her off that Monday and Tuesday, and then I had to do it again on Wednesday. And it's hard to say, like, is she going into a safe situation? And we've had the conversation more than once, what do you do in an active shooter? And first is hide, and second is get out a window if you can. And third is, if it's you, if there's 26 fourth graders and one shooter, throw everything you have at that person. And I keep psyching her up that 26 fourth graders versus one gunman, they'll win. But I'm saying that with my aggressive optimism. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to not have that conversation every 6 months or 2 weeks.
You know, I was the same way after Newtown. I remember sitting at the bus stop waiting for my kids and just tearing up, just saying, I want them. I could not hug them hard enough. And this idea is of that there's nothing we can do about this. You know, we can do things about it. We just choose not to. And that's at the end of the day, that's the decision we've made. We've decided that the guns are more important than even children's lives. And that is not a sane society. We cannot have that going forward. And, you know, nothing against, you know, you want to have a hunting weapon, by all means. You want to have a personal defense pistol, by all means. But the reality is that weapons that were designed for the war battlefield probably should not be in the hands of 18-year-olds with a clip that holds 40 rounds.
Right. And or maybe they live at the range, just like the military. I mean, you were in the military, so you don't keep a weapon under your pillow. It lived in the armory.
Yes.
So
yes.
that's not where you did not sleep with your gun unless you were in a wartime scenario. But soldiers at home or in the barracks, they don't have weapons on their person at all times. They're in the armory, mm-hmm. especially the mass weapons of war. So my sister was deployed in Afghanistan, and she's we called it her gunji. So it was the bungee attached between her uniform and her weapon, but it kept getting stuck on stuff. So she had to get used to carrying a weapon at all times because she was in Afghanistan, an active zone. But if you have to have these weapons in your life, they need to be in a very secure location, like a gun range in an armory. You can check it out like a library book when you get there.
And
we need to do something,
yep.
something more than nothing.
Well, and I always love that part of the well-regulated militia part, because we should be regulating that and training people how to use them, as opposed to just let's go buy one and start firing it off. That's just not right. People, if you're listening to this, Kate Luthner needs your help. We want to win 32. This would go a long way for the DFL to take back the majority in the Minnesota Senate. I could chat with you all day, Kate. You're fantastic.
Yep.
Let's get people to your campaign. I mean, help to all the listeners out there, help your local DFLer. By all means, help them out. But if you're in a district that's pretty much a slam dunk DFL win, get up to 32. Door knock, volunteer, donate. So, Kate, how do people do that?
I'm on Act Blue. That's my primary method, and it's been great. We have had supporters from out of district because a lot of the security districts are secure. And you're right. We need to work on these winnable districts. I've been identified at the DFL as a winnable, hot district. There's about six of us that they're working hard. There's no incumbent. It's myself and the other candidate are on equal footing for, you know, who we are in society. But it comes down to a money game. So you're right. The more we get to work with, the better we can do. And it's 50-50. So I am willing to knock doors and just work it. We're going to keep it simple and do that. But Act Blue is the number one. And my website, I'm sorry you're seeing the old one. We're having a new one launched within the week. But all the data there is accurate. So the link is on every page. And if you're in Act Blue, if you just Google, search Luthner, L-U-T-H-N-E-R. I don't actually sell cars, nor are we a religion, but it's very similar spelling, but I'm the only one in there. But there's a lot of Kates, so scroll through and find the right one. Somebody donated $1,000 last time, and
nice.
I called and said, hey, did you mean it? Because, you know, you're from Arizona. And he said, no, I mean it, because I'm in a secure district and I want my money to work for me and I like your style. I think you might have heard me on this potentially.
Well,
so
okay, people, that's a challenge then.
That's a challenge.
Kate Luthner, MN Senate. That's the old website. When you get me the new one, I'll put the other one out, okay, Kate?
It's going to be the same website. It's just getting a facelift.
All right. We'll link to all that. We'll link to the Act Blue as well. Kate Luthner, once again, Democrat of the Day, Senate District 32. Kate, all my best. You come back anytime, please, by all means.
Thank you so much. I'll get movies from you again next time.
We will talk more movies. And happy birthday to your daughter. We'll take
Thank
a break.
You.
Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. Let's get into the Minnesota coronavirus update before we finish up for the day. Tuesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,188 newly reported cases, 5 reported deaths. The state COVID-19 death toll now is 12,633. Today's update includes case data that reported in the 24-hour period ending at 4 a.m. on Friday. The data from the holiday weekend will be included in Wednesday's update, so expect that number to be fairly large when that number does come on out. According to the Minnesota Metropolitan and Wastewater data, 18% of samples in the area are BA2. BA2121 has increased to 71% of all samples. So a total of the BA2 family accounts for more than 88% of all samples. Through May 27th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 419, up from 416 on May 26th. Of those hospitalized, 34 people in intensive care, down from 35, and 385 in non-ICU care, up from 381. As of May 26th, the state reported that 3,916,617 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. vaccine. 3,711,940 people have completed the vaccine series, and 2,453,144 have been caught up to date on boosters. 1,507,168 people have gotten COVID in the state of Minnesota. Despite strong levels of vaccination among older people, COVID killed them at a vastly higher rates during the winter's Omicron wave than it did last year, preying on long delays since their last shots and variants' ability to skirt immune defenses. Oh, and I just, that you know, once again, the greatest generation deserves better. The greatest generation deserved better than have the Republicans say, well, let them die, they're all old people anyway, because that's what a lot of Republicans did say. And that was sad. Native Roots Radio is up next. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.